You black and you stuck in America.
Now what?
And you subject to police terror.
Now how come?
You bite your tongue to tolerate that gang with badges and blues, but you bang on each other for brother step on your shoes. Open fire on the Mother's Day parade in New Orleans, but afraid to pull that strap to combat black unemployment. We get snared by the assistance from their politician. With nothing to lose, there's nothing to fear in the system. Ditch them, switch up, bump, bump, baby bump. The masses are hungry, but the wealthy ain't giving up. Pack up a loaded, no a block of their cheese. So now we rock with a tournament to make them drop to their knees. Exploitation of our culture, fake and shaking in Harlem. That's why I got no problem when the homies come to rob them. Black atonement is anthem, so my comrades are cranking. Vegetarian, but down to put a pig in the blanket. It goes.
Educate, agitate, unify, mobilize, organize.
We down
to ride, organize. Educate, agitate, unify, mobilize, organize.
Good evening. Welcome to Black Autonomy Federation Radio. My name is Jonina Irvin, and I'll be your moderator for this evening's program. And we'll be talking about Let's Organize the Hood, Fighting Homelessness, Unemployment, and Poverty. And I'll be joined in the discussion this evening by my Black Autonomy comrades, Brother Lorenzo Comboa Irvin and Brother Yobachi Lamar. First, we want to start out and put this whole problem that we're talking about tonight in context. When you look at the United States, black people, we just make up 12 through 15% of the U.S. population. However, some 45% of homeless people in America are black. 12% black people, at least officially, are unemployed, and 25% live in poverty. Suffering from unemployment, underemployment, poverty, lack of affordable housing, mental health problems, and abuse, the homeless in America are the result of capitalism and the division between the upper poor and the upper rich in this period. All homeless people, but particularly those who are black and other people of color, are treated like criminals because of poverty and unemployment. But the homeless people are, of course, are poor people. And we're going to be talking tonight about how we begin to build a poor people survival movement, and we fight back against a society that values the lives of rich people over the poor and low-income workers. So, Brother Lorenzo, please start us out as we put this whole thing into context. Many people in the black community, we blame ourselves for the lack of jobs. We say we can't get jobs. There's something wrong with us. The high rate of poverty that we have in our community, we blame it on ourselves. But there are very specific, concrete reasons for this situation dating back several years. Could you please talk to us about that?
Well, in order to understand this thing, we got to go back really to the 1970s. Something called deindustrialization, which is what it is essentially is a process of social an economic change caused by the removal or reduction of industrial capacity or activity in a country, city, or whatever, especially heavy industry or manufacturing industry. Now, it's the opposite of industrialization. Well, what we had in the 1960s were the death of the so-called smokestack industries, whether it was steel production, whether it was manufacturing, heavy manufacturing, and other forms of industrialization. These were dying out. And they were dying out because the capitalists were sending those jobs to low-wage areas in order to exploit the labor of the peoples in the Far East or for a time, exploit people even in the South, you know, where wages are lower in the southern United States and so forth. So for a brief period in the southern United States and in other parts of North America, you had these companies essentially folding up, what we call runaway shops, and just leaving and going to other countries and other regions in order to get, lower wages for themselves. Well, this had a devastating impact in urban areas. Well, it had a devastating impact in two areas, actually. But we're going to talk about the urban areas. And in the rural areas, what you had were white people who lived in Appalachia, that had been working in the steel mills, that had been working in the mines and other places. Those people were driven in large numbers in the, well, starting actually in the 1960s, but continuing really in the 1970s. They were driven into the cities like Chicago and Detroit and these other places, along with black people who were in the South, who had also been part of the Great Migration, but this was accelerated in the 1970s, where you had massive numbers of people who lost their jobs inside the cities themselves and had no way of making a living. And so this led, both of these things led to poverty, a higher level of poverty, and permanent homelessness, in the sense that the government or the capitalist political system could not and would not do anything about it. You know, they had taken emergency measures in the 1930s, but in the 1970s, they refused to do anything. And all these people were just allowed to suffer and on the sidewalks in big cities and so forth. And we've been seeing that for the last 40 years or so. And then we have to point to mass unemployment in the 1980s as being another factor, and automation as being other factors in the rise of homelessness, urban unemployment and poverty, along with capital flight. And what that means is that these banks and others stopped paying taxes in the United States and took their money into so-called offshore tax havens. So that also contributed to it. And then they, inside the United States itself, they moved many jobs that had been in the urban areas, industrial jobs as well as manufacturing jobs. They moved those jobs out of the urban areas and to the suburbs, so that black working class, black and other peoples of color, working class people who might not have had, a car, a reliable automobile, and had a way of getting to those jobs, along with, the kind of cutbacks in public transportation, which prevented them from getting access to those jobs. So this also had a devastating impact, as I said, on urban employment and unemployment, and the rise of mass unemployment. And then, along this process, you had jobs that were being placed into the hands of so-called consultants, temporary services, and other job brokers. And these people were notorious about exploiting your labor. I have gone to work for these people myself. In the inner city, you know, jobs when I was living in Atlanta, you have to go to these people to help you get a job. Then when you get the job, they take a significant portion of your salary. It might be as much as 30-40% of your salary. You're at the total, mercy of these people. They can fire you at will. And then on top of everything else, another factor that has led to a mass unemployment in this period has been the exploitation of prison labor, which has cut into free labor. Now, the government has always said that this would not be the case. This was not the case, that prison labor would not cut into free labor. But they intentionally wanted this to happen because they created the so-called Unicorps, which was the federal, which was the first federal corporation to exploit prison labor and prison, and they were able to use that, and then their example was emulated by the states. And so this it was an additional factor that cut into free labor. And I'll give you an example. When I was in the federal prison system, one of the places I worked at, or they tried to make me work at, before I became an organizer for the Prisoners Union, one of the places I worked at was a place where they actually made guided missile parts for the cruise missile, which, was a major armament for the American military at the time. Now, the reality is, although they had prisoners doing it inside the prisons, and they always spread this propaganda that, prisoners would be able to then go out in the streets and have a job that they could, use so someone would hire them. Well, the reality was they would never get a job doing this because, they had to have a security clearance. And so they were just strictly exploiting prison labor. But they're doing that, that put a lot of people in the street out of work in the armaments industry and in other industries. So all of these things that I cited, and especially deindustrialization, where the economy changed, was transformed, those things led to one, mass unemployment, and two, led to widespread homelessness, because if you don't have any money, you obviously cannot pay for housing. And then on top of everything else, the government started dismantling the low-income housing sector, you know. So all of this stuff was going on, and one of the factors that we have to talk about today is the lack of a fight back during this period. The lack of a fight back. And in fact, what happened is that a class of poverty pimps were created. A class of poverty pimps were created that managed and regulated the poor along with the state. You know, so these people who run the homeless shelters, these people who, you know, act as so-called advocates for the poor and all these people, their role was to make sure that the homeless, well, homelessness as a political issue never became a potent or dangerous political issue, and they also was designed to make sure that they kept the homeless population under control, and that they themselves, that the homeless themselves couldn't say anything. Poor people could not speak for themselves. So this is the picture, or this was the process, I should say, that has led us to this point. Jonina?
Right, and what we have a problem with today is we have, as you said, we have a lot of social welfare, or I should say social service organizations, which are many of which are run by white people, are controlled by mostly white people, where you have people who are largely homeless. As I said at the beginning, 45% of the homeless people in the United States are people of African descent, yet we only make up 12 to 15% of the population, yet when we are being treated as clients by nonprofit organizations, most of which are not run by people of color or black people, people who are homeless. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Never miss an episode of Black Autonomy Federation Radio. Get the podcast by going to blackautonomyfederationradio.blogspot.com.
Welcome back to Black Autonomy Federation Radio. This evening we're talking about fighting homelessness, unemployment, and poverty. And one of the things that has made the current situation so bad was that in 1996 we had new federal legislation, so-called federal welfare legislation, was passed. And it was passed in the administration of Bill Clinton, which some people want to say was the first black president. I'm not certain why that is, but at any rate, this federal welfare legislation happened. What, as a result of it, what we have seen, particularly since it passed, we have a criminalization of poor people, and certainly there's a criminalization of homeless people as well. But overall, in the United States now, as a result of this so-called welfare reform legislation, poor people in this country are being criminalized. The real crime, of course, is poverty and unemployment. But in this country, if you are poor, if you are homeless, that is considered to be the crime. Brother Lamar, I want to bring you into this. You are in Chicago. You are in Chicago, which is the third largest city in the United States. And can you talk about, you know, you have had experiences yourself as being a person on the street, a person being homeless. Can you talk about what's going on in Chicago, and not only that, but your own experiences, this whole issue of being treated like a criminal because people are poor or because they are homeless?
Yes. Well, first of all, thanks for allowing me to thanks for allowing me to, the opportunity to speak on a radio broadcast. And greetings to Brother Lorenzo as well, and the brother hosting the radio show. I did 15 years, my last bid, my last stretch. And then while I was on the inside, a lot of people who I saw, they were, in prison. Yes.
Okay.
And, the majority of the people who I saw in prison who were my peers were for the most part black, overwhelmingly black and Hispanic, and were people of who come from low income households or who came from the street. There's a lot of people in wheelchairs. Medication line in prison is long. 2/3 of the prison population in this country is functionally illiterate. So, that has to say a lot concerning the school to prison pipeline. The education that we're taught in school anyway, which has a bearing on how we develop when we're older, has also played a significant role in in becoming prisoners of various sorts. The education they teach in school is capitalistic. So when you have a capitalistic teaching growing up in school mixed with poverty, it leads, one plus one, equals two. So a lot of people who are unconscious end up to get something to eat, to handle, to take care of the basic necessities of survival, such as food, clothing, and shelter. People resort to selling drugs or slip into a gangbanger lifestyle because people who feel, the ones with the money and everything, they ignore people. So for the most part, here in Chicago, and I'm sure it's pretty much like that in a lot of places. There's what some folks call the Heine Heinesses. They just stick their noses up at you, and a lot of people in prison have felt that. A lot of people in prison talk to themselves, which I've thought about may not be, talking to yourself might be one of the most personal people to talk to that you could. there's a lot of interesting things that happen in the mind of prisoners, and in particular prisoners who come from the streets. It's interesting because prisoners, and people in general who quote unquote talk to themselves or whatever, are understood more by other people, it seems like, of other poor folk, whereas you have people with PhDs and everything who just don't get it, who just think, look at folks as crazy. Here in Illinois, child poverty is a big thing. You know what I'm saying? Poverty period is a big thing. Child poverty is substantial, significant, because it deals with our future. You know what I'm saying? Here in Illinois, well, nationally, child poverty is at 39.4% for blacks, whereas in Chicago, it's 50.4%. Whereas whites, child poverty is only 13.5% nationally, and only 8.8% in Chicago. So that's just about a 42% difference in Chicago alone in regards to child poverty when it comes to black and white and Latino. And for Latinos, child poverty nationally, this is according to 2011, child poverty was at 33.9% nationally, and 36% in Chicago. So whereas in Chicago, we have 36% Latino child poverty, 50.4% black child poverty here in Chicago, whereas white child poverty only at 8.8%. So there's a obvious contradiction and blatant inequality going on. Now, the number of poor blacks is on the increase, while the number of poor whites in Chicago has shrunk. So from 2000 to 2011, the percentage of black child poverty went up from 40.1% to 50.7%. That's a huge increase. Now here in Chicago, we see there's a lot of kids that a lot of kids with no shirts on, with holes in their shorts, holes in their shoes. A lot of children, there's no social programs that are geared toward helping them sustain a sense of self-value, not only other kinds of value as well, but a sense of self-esteem, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of that goes to the school again, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, in school, when they're teaching capitalism, dog-eat-dog, cutthroat kind of way of living, and at the same time not telling the brothers and sisters how that's dying out here, that it's a direct correlation that leads you up to shooting dice and everything. It's the same thing, so that's definitely an issue, as well as the school to prison pipeline with nationalism is concerned. You have people, when we were kids in school, put our hands and on our hearts and everything and pledge allegiance to a national flag, which is nationalism, you know what I'm saying? But they didn't tell us that when we get older that there's king flags, you know, they're saying that nationalism, whether it's the almighty Latin king and queen nation, or disciple nation, nationalism is also a pipeline that was passed through education, through indoctrinated education.
Let me ask you this. You were just talking about, I think you mentioned some of the gangs. You were talking about Disciple Nation. Of course, the Disciples is one of the major gangs in Chicago. You know, we hear on the news and we read in the headlines, there's a lot of talk about, Chicago, there's supposed to have been so many shootings all the time. We're hearing about violence in Chicago, whether, gang-related or whatever. So mm-hmm. In your observation as being someone that lives in Chicago, in the neighborhood, so what is the relationship between, gang-banging and the kind of violence that we have in some of our neighborhoods and that in relationship to poverty? I mean, what do you see as a relationship between those two things?
The immediate thing that sticks out is poor folks. Poor folks is the people who gang bang is for the most part poor folks trying to get money, trying to get something to sustain themselves. In our neighborhood, in the neighborhood I live in alone, there's 400 unoccupied buildings. So unoccupied homes, so there's people on the street. And the poverty, when people see, just like last night when I was over across the street from the park, and there was crews out there. They, 40 on this side, about 40, 50 on the other side, and everyone, there's people with Benzes and stuff like that. And black folks don't, we don't make that kind of money from, McDonald's or something, So people, and McDonald's isn't even hiring. And I went to one McDonald's to get something to eat, and somebody was trying to apply for a job there, and they said they were not hiring. So you can't even, the poverty is definitely related to people wanting to get money to get out of poverty. And the gangbanging, it's kind of like it sucks people in, because people feel hopeless, because it's a capitalist society. So if you have a capitalist society, you need capital to fit into it. You know what people feel like? You need capital to fit into it. You need some to generate some type of know, what they call guap, you know, some type of money to, you know, to, not only that, it gives people, I watched it happen to me too, before the light bulb was flicked on in my head, that it gives you a sense of, like, yes, of accomplishment, like, you know, yeah, there's white folks down there in business suits and all that, but look, I have a house, I have a place to live too, and I have this, that, and the third. So people are misled into believing that getting money is the only way to happiness until they find themselves with a bullet in their head. So it's this is dark reality. Like this last 4th of July weekend, I think it was like 80 some people got shot, and I think it was like 14 people got killed. 5 people who got killed over the 4th of July weekend were killed by police bullets here in Chicago. But they don't really put that on blast. You know, they don't put that out there. You know, they try to glamorize the gang banging, and you know what I'm saying? So they criminalize more folks of color and everything, because down where I'm at, it's all black folks. You know what I'm saying? It's probably seen like just, you know, so it's, whereas like if you go to certain other neighborhoods in the city, like on the north side or something, you know, there's a lot of white folks that's more privileged, and there's not a whole lot of abandoned buildings and stuff, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I hope I answered that question.
We're going to talk a little bit more as we get into the show about this whole issue of the criminalization of poor people, but I wanted you to talk about that because we hear so much, particularly about Chicago and gang violence and everything. But a lot of times what is not being said a lot and people don't understand is that, you know, there is a direct relationship there to poverty. And people are not just out there doing things just to be doing them. That it's because of the high level of poverty that our people have been experiencing in the city of Chicago, which does, as I said before, happen to be the third largest city. We're going to take a break, and we will be back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Bad self, say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. Say it loud. Say it loud.
I'm black and I'm proud.
Say it loud.
Welcome back to Black Autonomy Federation Radio. I'm your moderator this evening, Jonina Irvin. We're going to be, as we continue our discussion this evening, we are going to be opening up our call-in line if someone has a question or would like to make a comment. And you can do that by calling area code 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. I want to take a couple minutes here to talk a little bit more about this overall problem that we have in the United States right now in terms of the criminalization of poverty, when it's poverty that should be the crime. I mentioned before about how the 1996 so-called federal welfare reform legislation kind of changed the whole system in terms of people being able to get food stamps and other kind of assistance from the government. And one of the things that has happened is that since that legislation was passed, we now have a direct relationship between the government and, like, your local welfare offices. So what the police and other law enforcement agencies do now, if they are trying to find somebody, for instance, who, let's say, who has a warrant out on them, they have the authority and the ability to check at the welfare offices to see who may have applied for some type of assistance, whether it's food stamps or cash assistance, whatever it is. And so, you know, you may think that, you know, you are someone who just needs food stamps or something, but if you have some kind of a warrant for a traffic ticket or something, or maybe you were speeding, the cops can go to the local welfare office and find out who you are, and you can be gotten into the office on a ruse. Your worker may say, oh, I need you to come in. We got to fill out some more paperwork or something, or there's some additional information that we need. But when in fact you go over there and do that, the police or the sheriff's deputy is there waiting to arrest you. So this is what we have seen with this so-called welfare reform, where you know, it's really hooked up and direct linkly to the so-called criminal justice system. And this is happening all over the country. It's more and more we find the welfare system is being used by police and other law enforcement agencies to arrest and incarcerate people who may have some type of a legal problem. We have a caller on the line. I want to take the call. It's area code 973. Please go ahead and you make your comment or ask your question.
That's me?
Yes, go ahead. Area code 973.
I was just calling to listen in.
Oh, okay then. All right.
This is the first time.
Okay, that's all right. Go ahead. That's no problem. We're happy to have you listen in.
Thank
the other
you.
Thing before I take it back to Brother Lorenzo that I wanted to mention this whole
you might want
issue
to give her the number. You might want to give her that number.
If you are listening, if you are listening, for those of you who just want to listen, it's 1-530-881-1400. That's 1-530-881-1400. And that way you can just listen only.
Is there a line?
Yeah, she needs the access code, the access
that's
code.
549-549-032-pound.
Thank you.
Welcome. Right. Thank you for listening in. I just wanted to say this one quick thing. In terms of the overall situation of the criminalization of the poor, when we look particularly at the criminalization of people in this country who are homeless, there are a lot of cities in the United States that don't even allow nonprofits or churches to even feed people on the streets. They can't even, you know, have some kind of a food giveaway or something. They are eliminating that. And a lot of the laws that are being used against the homeless, people wouldn't be out on the streets if there was enough housing for people. They wouldn't have to be out on the streets. But most of the cities in this country do not have the kind of housing that is necessary. So we have this problem, and people who are homeless and who are poor become criminalized. Brother Lorenzo, you know, in the Black Autonomy Federation, of course, we definitely want all homeless people to have decent housing. And we also, overall, broadly speaking, we think that poor and working class people of African descent, we are the ones who can best free us. We poor and working class people.
We're getting some feedback that's pretty terrible.
Of feedback.
Yes, we are.
Okay,
that's better.
You got to tell people to turn their...
Right. If you're listening, you need to mute your phones, too. Right. Yeah, otherwise we do get feedback. Thank you.
Also, with the speakerphone, never put us on speakerphone because that's where their feedback likely is coming from. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's a good
line. That was my fault. I just took myself off speakerphone. Apologize about that.
Yes.
Yeah, well, anyway... Let me respond to what you're asking.
Go ahead, Lorenzo.
Firstly, we got to recognize that this is actually a form of government attack. You know, what's happening to homeless people. I talk about what created the homeless as a mass population in the United States. One of the things that we need to always point out is that when we were organizers with the Black Panther Party and other organizations in the 1960s, there was no mass homelessness. It didn't exist. Now, poverty existed, but you did not have mass homelessness. That is strictly a feature of late-stage capitalism,
mm-hmm.
And it was caused by the deliberate policies of politicians working for the capitalists, as well as capitalist industries
with some of the things I pointed out, you know, that created, you know, deindustrialization and urban poverty. Those things, we are still living with those things, and they've been compounded by other actions by the government up to this point. Now, as far as the black community, one of the things that we have to bear in mind and we have to explain to people is that in this period, mass unemployment in the black community is at double-digit figures. You pointed out, talking about 12 to 15%. It has been 12 to 15% overall for the last 15 to 20%. In fact, we have never recovered from these various recessions that have taken place. You know, this last one being 2008, or what, actually 2007. But we've never recovered from that on the one hand. And on the other hand is that the figures right now, like I said, were on par with the Great Depression of the 1930s, where in the first phases of the Great Depression of 1930s, 1929 to 1932, there was 15% unemployment in the United States. Later, it was 25%. Well, in the black community, since this 2008 depression, this 2008 so-called business recession, there has been 26% unemployment. In fact, it's 26% poverty level, above 26% right now in Memphis, being the poorest big city in the country. So we have got to be able to explain to people that the things that are happening to us is as a result of deliberate policies of the government. Even though we got a so-called black president, it has not meant anything in terms of the actual living conditions of working class and poor black people. It's not meant anything. He doesn't even mention the fact that there are poor people. And when I'm talking about Obama, and when it is mentioned to him in some form or fashion, he quickly drops it and started talking about the middle class. Well, to some extent, what's happening to the so-called middle class is that the middle class has become part of a new type of poor. You know, they have lost their jobs, and they are suffering as well on a long-term basis. But many of the whites will get their jobs back, whereas in the black community, even people who are middle class right now, they may never get jobs again on the level that they were at before. And, and so they're pushing down, it's a policy of pushing down the so-called middle class down to the poor, and then the traditional poor being pushed into homelessness and deeper poverty. And so that's one of the things we need to point out. And so also, let me just point out, so the brother started talking about prisons and how prisons have begun to stock so many poor people within it. I mean, to me, it has always been a process of poor people into the prison system. But I will say that when I went to prison in the 1970s, early 1970s, 69 to, you know, right in there, somewhere right in there, when I went to prison in that period, I think it was like 70% white and 30% black. Well, of course, now it's changed. The numbers have been flipped. And as a result of the so-called war on drugs, those numbers have been flipped. And what's happened also is that prisons have become the new low-income housing projects for the poor, homeless, and young people of color. Africans in America and Latinos, Hispanics, make up 25% of the U.S. population. Yet, they make up 75% of the U.S. prison population. And this has had an effect on our community. It has led to even, to most of this poverty that we're talking about, and even more poverty is coming. But what about with the children? In a calculation of the number of children with parents in prisons from 1980, when I was in prison, to 2000, a study found that numbers increased from 350,000 to 2.1 million by the year 2000, or about 3% of all U.S. children having a parent in prison. And now an estimated 66 to 70% of all those in prison have minor children. And black and Hispanic families, well, they're saying, were 3 to 5 times more likely to have parents in prison. So we're talking about families being destroyed and devastated by mass imprisonment. Mm-hmm. And even if they hadn't gone to prison, what they had, what the government itself has done to our communities, and in the process of giving money, in the process of giving money to the rich, because what we're talking about, that old adage that says the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And so the period now we're talking about, this is what we got. We got a poor and a super poor, and a rich and a super rich. And the super rich is that class right now that owns the corporations, that 1%. They have the tax codes that favor them, the wealthy. Their capital flight, and even Obama, a lot of people didn't get it the other day, was put in very small caption. Obama was calling out the corporations that have used offshore tax havens, and he's calling for, which they're going to ignore him, but he's calling for economic patriotism. Now, those are his words, economic patriotism. Right. He says that those corporations that are going over to these tax havens, whether they're in Europe or whether they're in, the Caribbean or Asia, let me just point that out as well, those tax havens are devastating or helping to devastate the American economy. And part of that is the reason why, according to him, in a longer, speech, that there is not the funding for social programs. Now, this is part of what he said. So what we're looking at is a kind of situation where the class war has changed terms. Now, I don't mean that it no longer exists. It's just that instead of us talking about industry and the working class and in the industry and the plants and all of a sudden, we're not talking about that anymore. We're talking about mass poverty on a broad scale, so that actually the United States, but not only the United States, but the entire world is a ghetto now. You got mass poverty as a result of what capitalism as a system is doing. And we have to be able to explain this to people. More importantly, we have to be able to organize people. We've got to be able to build a movement. And this is what the Poor People Survival Movement is designed to do. The idea is we create a national black unemployment movement, or black-led, whichever case may be, to create a mass fight-back movement in this depression. And it would be made up of poor people's community-based groups from all over the country with delegates elected from all the local groups. Now, a group like this could meet to map out a large-scale attack on unemployment, as well as serve as a national clearinghouse of black unemployment conditions. See, we're going to have to fight this ourselves. We're going to have to fight the effect of what they're doing. But we're going to also have to fight the rich class that's perpetrating this upon us. And until we understand this, we're going to be captured by sellouts and poverty pimps like Jesse Jackal and some of the rest of them. So on the local level in the black and poor neighborhoods, the Poor People Survival Movement, which is a program of black autonomy, would create the local community unemployment organizations. And when I say unemployment organizations, I'm not just talking about we're asking for unemployment benefits alone. We've got to deal with the kind of system, the unjust economic system that created this problem in the first place. So we're going to have to fight these people. But we're going to have to establish programs to survive while we do it. We can't starve to death while we fight these people. We got to establish food and housing co-ops. We got to lead rent strikes and squatting. We got to initiate land and building reclamation projects. We got to establish producer and consumer co-ops. We got to distribute food and clothing and provide for other services. And these would, and also we would have to establish neighborhood medical clinics for free treatment of the homeless and unemployed. So just like one of the things that the Black Panther Party did to me, that's everlasting as an example, is that they created the survival programs for pending revolution. They said it's pending revolution. And I really don't believe that we could just recreate the Black Panther program in this period and just as if nothing has happened in the intervening 50 years. But what I do think we need to understand is that we have got to fight these people based on the material and economic conditions that exist right now, the political conditions that exist right now. And the government and the corporations have been able to neutralize protest movements. That's the thing to bear in mind of. There's never been any victories whatsoever by movements. And you have to look back at other poor people's movements. The only time they ever accomplished anything is when they were in the streets and when they disrupted the system, when they overthrew, when they were doing something to put the system into crisis or distress. You know what I'm saying? And we have to find a way, you know, to be able to do that. We have to find a way to organize people and make them into organizers in their own communities and so forth. We can't come and do everything for them, but we can train them to do it themselves. And as part of a broader-based movement, we can begin to challenge these people, and we can begin to defeat these people, which is what we have to do. Let's be clear about that. We're not just out there to show.
Benzoma, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to hold that thought, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
So instead of legislation, in my opinion, it takes education. The whites have to be re-educated so that the racism that they have in their hearts can be eliminated, and our people have to be re-educated so that we will know how to do something for ourselves, instead of waiting for others to do it for us all the time.
Tune in to Black Autonomy Federation Radio broadcast every Saturday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern.
Welcome back to Black Autonomy Federation Radio. One of the things that Brother Lorenzo mentioned was talking about dealing with getting housing in our communities and fight back community organizing. Brother Lamar, if you could just kind of briefly tell us what you have been working on in Chicago in terms of the community center and a liberation school there, to, as part of, you know, Black Autonomy Federation's program to create spaces, livable conditions in our communities.
Yes, sure. We started up the Englewood Liberation School. We are the Black Autonomy Federation Chicago chapter. I'm part of the local organizing committee, and we started the Englewood Liberation School last month, and we're doing this as because, you know, we didn't have a place to live, so need a place to live. That's one reason. Need a roof over our head, especially in Chicago winter, anywhere. Period. You know, there's a sense of personal human pride that comes with it, which is no vice. That comes with having a roof over your head and so forth. Another thing that we're doing is we're transforming what's a board up into a base area of resistance. And a few of the things that we're doing there is providing a safe space where people could speak about community issues, or if there's any protests or actions planned up, people can go there and use it as a space for organizing, for making banners. We're also doing, whereas the Panthers had the Free Breakfast for Children, which was dynamite, you know what I'm saying? We're doing free food deliveries to the neighbors. So what we, and it's, you know, it's basically from scratch, like how Fred Hampton kind of did it with getting food from different donations, from different food pantries and stuff. And using that to serve the people with, you know what I'm saying? So That's another thing that we're doing. Now we're also setting up other things as well. We're have our rapport with the neighbors, being that we're doing the canvassing and everything, and asking the neighbors questions. Our rapport has developed into a close knit affinity, where people, when people see us in the neighborhood, give us a little upright fist, you know what I'm saying, give them one back, and a little head nod, hey bro, hey sis, it's a different atmosphere that can be felt than a what's up my N or what's up, it's that to offer as well. It's a different kind of lingo going on, and you could visually see the difference and feel the difference. Being an ex-gangbanger into a revolutionary. And one of the things that it feels great. One of the things that we advocate at the Liberation School is helping brothers and sisters as well transform from our ideology from gang war to class war. And that is very substantial, because where I live at is sandwiched between GDs as gangster disciples and Black Keystones. And it's like fireworks. It's like popcorn in a microwave out there a lot of nights. It's like just perpetual popping. Sound of ghetto birds, which is helicopters, you know what I'm saying, whoever's listening, helicopters and spotted. So, you know, it sounds like, you know, there's nights where it sounds like we're literally in like the Gulf War or something in the 90s. And speaking of such, as Brother Lorenzo commented on deindustrialization, and that kind of flickered in my head, how in my lifetime, I personally watched the prison industrial complex as well as the military industrial complex become sadistic bedfellows, responsible for a plethora of diseases that we're confronted with in the Black community. Both profit off us, predominantly low-income people, whether it's people wanting to get college tuition and stuff like that, or whatever, that, you know, people go to the military as slaves, you know what I'm saying? So we're used as cannon fodder and sweatshop slaves. So, the prison industrial complex and the military industrial complex are two things that we speak on as well at the Liberation School, and hipping brothers to what's going on, and to statistics also, such as in Illinois, poverty among Blacks is 57.7%. 57%, whereas whites is only 28.7%. You know what I'm saying? So while there's that 26% nationwide thing in cities like Chicago, and I'm sure it's high in Memphis as well, and in a lot of Black ghettos and cities where it's, you know, in places where there's mostly Black folks, you could see the differentiation between people of color and whites. You know what I'm saying? So we that's okay. Definitely something that we teach at the Black Autonomy, that we teach at the Englewood Liberation School.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you for telling us about. As we move towards the end of this evening's show, we're talking about fighting homelessness, unemployment, and poverty. And certainly one of the problems that I mentioned earlier was that we have a situation where poor people in this country are treated beyond being criminalized. They are treated as if they have no ability to think for themselves and to organize for themselves. They are treated as like clients, but there's no other word for it. They are treated like clients as opposed to people who can think for themselves and do for themselves. And Brother Lorenzo, for the Black Autonomy Federation, we, of course, we are an organization that was created to organize poor, low-income, working-class Black people, because we believe that we are our own leaders and that we must change our own conditions. The problem that we face with poverty, unemployment, homelessness, and other issues, of course, is a really serious problem. And this is not a problem that's going to be eradicated overnight. What would be your final thoughts as we come to a conclusion of our show this evening about what are the most important things that poor, low-income people in our black communities need to be doing now to address this problem of massive unemployment and poverty that we're facing?
Well, you know, having thought about this stuff a long time and having been victimized, not necessarily by homelessness, but by poverty for most of my life, it really is important for people to get a clear analysis of what's happening. That's important. That if we could do nothing else but to be able to give people a clear analysis and to begin to give them a way of organizing themselves. The whole idea of a revolutionary movement is to be able to give the people themselves a kind of organization that they can use to fight the rich with. And so if we start doing this in the black community, as the brother was saying, the reality is in the black community, we don't have the kind of organizations. We, you know, like the white folks created the Occupy movement and other things like that. But nobody talked about the condition of black people who are suffering more than anybody else in society. So we've got to be able to come together to educate people. We got to be able to come together to, then organize people into movement. And then after we organize people into movement, then we've got to be able to mobilize against what the rich are doing. They're too comfortable. They're stealing money. They're stealing money out of the city's treasury and whatever while we starve it to death. The rich are stealing this money, and we need to be able to come together and bring together the neighborhoods into a revolutionary movement, to build a movement throughout the city. And when we're able to do that, then we'll be able to impact a great many of the things that happen, and we'll be on the road then to being able to dictate our own condition, what's happening to us right now. So that's what I think. I think that we've got to start creating the basics now, which is what we're trying to do. Because when we have these broadcasts, what we're really doing here is we're talking to organizers or potential organizers. We're not talking necessarily to the people in the neighborhoods. We're talking to people who are organizers or potential organizers, and we have to talk about then coming to the stage where we change everything. And that's what we are. And we're going to sign off, my brother and sisters, and everyone who's been listening to this broadcast. I'm going to have to do it, Sister Jonina's phone once again is talked out on her. But whatever the case may be, we appreciate everyone calling in to and listening to Black Autonomy Federation Radio this week. And we hope that you will tell others about the broadcast. We hope that you'll listen again next week. And we hope that you will work with us and join Black Autonomy or work with any of the organizations that Black Autonomy is creating on the local level. You'll work with us and help us build a broad-based movement in the spirit, which is what we really need. And we don't have very many radical voices at this time in history. And this is a time in history when people are being victimized and thrown into prison and families being destroyed and communities being destroyed. And so we have to build the basics of unity in this period. And so this is what Black Autonomy is about. And if you want to get in touch with Black Autonomy, you can reach us at the Black Autonomy page on Facebook, Black Autonomy Federation page. And also there's a page for New York City, the Black Autonomy Northeastern Federation, as well as a page for Los Angeles, and we are going to have it in other cities as well. You can also contact us over the internet, I should say by email, at organize, Hood, H-O-O-D, at gmail.com. That's organize.the.hood@gmail.com. You can also reach us through that. Thank you very much for calling in, and we'll see you again next week, or we'll hear from you and talk to you again next week. Thank you.
So I can get around it. Oh, Lord.
Never miss an episode of Black Autonomy Federation Radio. Get the podcast by going to Black Autonomy Federation Radio. blogspot.com.
America.
Now what?
And you subject the police terror.
Now how come?
You bite your tongue to tolerate that gang with badges and blues, but you bang on each other for brother step on your shoes. Open fire on the Mother's Day parade in New Orleans, but afraid to pull that strap to combat black unemployment. We get snared by assistance from their politician. With nothing to lose, there's nothing to fear in the system. Dish em, switch up, bump, bump, baby bump. The masses are hungry, but the wealthy ain't giving up. Pack up a loaner, no a block of their cheese. So now we rock with a tournament to make them drop to their knees. Exploitation of our culture, faking, shaking in Harlem. That's why I got no problem when the homies come to rob them. Black autonomous anthem, so my comrades are cranking. Vegetarian, but down to put a pig in the blanket. It goes.
Educate, agitate, unify, organize, organize.
Down
the ride, organize,
hook.
Educate, agitate, unify, organize, organize.
Unify,
hook. Educate, agitate, unify, organize, organize.
Down the ride,
organize, hook. Educate, agitate, unify, organize, organize.
Fake if you don't advocate for black revolution. They tell you-